Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. Located at 6080 Falls Road, more information can be found at theivybookshop.com.
From the Baltimore Sun, I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Roughly Speaking, episode 331. For Thursday, December 7th, 2017.
Last week, the governor expressed doubts in Mayor Catherine Pugh's plans to fight violent crime.
I didn't consider that to be an immediate violent crime plan or strategy, and I still don't.
Maryland Governor Larry Hogan, after playing nice with Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh for most of her first year in office, dissed her plan for dealing with crime in the city, the mother of all issues facing the mayor. And now, we pretty much have a rift between Annapolis and Baltimore, between the Republican governor from the suburbs of Maryland and the Democratic mayor from Northwest Baltimore. And at a time when the city is about to finish another year with more than 300 homicides. Today on the show, we'll talk about the Hogan-Pugh rift with Luke Broadwater, City Hall reporter for the Baltimore Sun, who last weekend had a story on Pugh's first year in office, a year in which the mayor saw her inaugural agenda overwhelmed by the crime problem. For several months, Hogan had been talking about helping the city combat crime, and on Tuesday he announced his plan with neither Pugh nor Baltimore Police Commissioner Kevin Davis at his side.
Flanked by a rainbow of uniforms Tuesday afternoon, Governor Larry Hogan erased the jurisdictional boundaries on law enforcement badges, announcing the emergency action in the heart of Maryland's deadliest city. With Baltimore's body count ticking above 320 murders in 2017, a crime-fighting network will combat the city's most dangerous criminals. Maryland State Police now helping Baltimore police serve warrants. 200 state parole officers chasing down probation violators and 80 federal marshals sweeping the city.
I have absolutely no tolerance whatsoever for these repeat violent offenders and these criminal gangs causing lawlessness in our streets.
Reporting live tonight, I'm Kimberly Eaton for WJZ.
Kimberly, thank you. Last week, the governor expressed doubts in Mayor Catherine Pugh's plans to fight violent crime.
I didn't consider that to be an immediate violent crime plan or strategy, and I still don't.
That was WJZ's Tuesday night report. Wednesday morning, Pugh responded to Hogan's dissing of the city's crime strategy and the plan the mayor released in late summer.
Well, less than 24 hours after the governor took aim at Baltimore's violent crime problem, the mayor is firing back. And WJZ is live at City Hall. Kimberly Eaton with why she's calling the state plan nothing new.
City leaders say a lot of the things the governor announced yesterday to fight crime have actually been happening in Baltimore for some time. Things like state police and feds coming in to serve warrants. So city leaders say it's not a new partnership, just an expanded one. Wednesday morning, Mayor Catherine Pugh holding a copy of the agenda from a July meeting with Governor Larry Hogan.
I just want to be very clear that those discussions were had.
There are already ongoing partnerships with the Maryland State Police and the Baltimore Police Department regarding the service of high-profile violent crime warrants. That's nothing new. That's been going on for some time now.
There wasn't anything new announced.
Less than 24 hours later, the mayor trotting out city department heads, everyone from the Top Gun to recreation and parks, all touting violence reduction initiatives ranging from street lighting to youth programs in high crime neighborhoods. Mayor Pugh says it's working, with the number of homicides and non-fatal shootings dropping over the last 5 weeks.
As a citizen of the city and the state, I have to be grateful for the crime plan Hogan announced this week. And he has a point about Pugh's plan. A year ago, after taking the oath of office, the new mayor gave an uninspired inauguration speech that did not make fighting crime loudly and clearly a priority. Now, she takes issue with that. She bristled at that. In a recent episode of Roughly Speaking, she said the crime plan she released in late summer was merely an update of the one she put forth in the 2016 campaign. And she rattled off a litany of initiatives on the crime front since taking office. Now here comes Hogan, apparently unconvinced that Pugh knows what she's doing. But I gotta ask, Governor, what took you so long? Thanks for the initiatives on stemming violent crime in beleaguered Baltimore, but it's not like this crisis happened in the last week. We've been in a violent crime crisis for 2.5 years. And while late is better than never, pardon me for smelling the odor of election year politics. I'm sure Hogan wants to remind everyone that he's a man of action who cares deeply about Baltimore, though his record on helping the state's largest city rise up from the unrest of April 2015 is, to say the least, spotty. Okay, let's go over this with Luke Broadwater, City Hall reporter for The Sun. On Tuesday, the governor of Maryland announced his plan to attack crime in Baltimore City. And Luke, in looking at that announcement, I know that reporters don't use phrases like this, but it looked to me like he kind of threw the mayor to the curb. Larry Hogan conducted this press conference without the mayor present, without the police commissioner present, and announced, this is what I'm going to do. This is what the state's going to do to arrest crime in Baltimore City. Also criticized the mayor for her plan for dealing with crime in Baltimore, saying basically that it was too touchy-feely, too soft, too focused on the root causes of crime rather than just the immediate crisis. Am I reading this correctly?
You are reading it absolutely correctly. Mayor Pugh, for better or worse, her first year, as we wrote this weekend, has been consumed and perhaps overwhelmed by crime. When she came into office, she had a bunch of things she wanted to do, taking back more control of the schools and dividing up the housing department and lots of various aspects of city government she wanted to tackle and change and reform. But the crime has been the primary topic that most Baltimoreans are concerned about. We have our third year now of more than 300 homicides. We have on pace for more than 1,000 shootings this year. Carjackings are way up 34% more than they were last year. And that's on top of record violence the previous 2 years. So even if she wanted to focus on other things, even if she wanted to be an education mayor or a housing mayor, or I actually think she cares a lot about the homeless and she really wants to do things for the homeless. She has to be a crime mayor, and that's what the citizens are demanding and what the public's focused the attention on.
When you go back to her campaign, because she goes back to her campaign, when we say, well, I say, I criticize her for not hitting the ground running on crime from the get-go, December 2016, when she was inaugurated, and she bristles at that. But when you look back on her campaign, how would you define her candidacy? Was she the education mayor? Was she the crime mayor?
So she did release a crime plan, but she was far from the first to do so. Both Sheila Dixon and Elizabeth Embry came out very early with crime plans. And so I would not say that she emphasized that as her primary focus. It was more about turning the city forward and investing in youth and things. She was talking a lot about Judy centers.
And Judy Sanders.
And having accountability of the schools. She started the Baltimore Design School. So she was really talking about investing in people, taking care of the homeless, things like that. She did release a crime plan, and that is accurate. That said, I also think it's indisputable that for the first half of the year, her mayor's office of criminal justice was completely in disarray. They had 3 directors in 6 months. More than half the staff left. They canceled Operation Ceasefire, which a lot of people think is a program that can have an impact. So now they do have a director. They are hiring people. They are refocused again. But I don't even think it's in dispute that there were serious problems in how the city was approaching the crime fight to start the year.
Now, in my evaluation of her crime plan, when it was finally published, her so-called update of the crime plan in, what, August? Is that when we got it?
Yes.
I think it was July or August.
The updated crime plan came out in August.
Okay. I mean, I thought it was pretty good. It was comprehensive. You could say it's holistic because it deals with kids and it looks at ex-offenders. It looks at, jobs and all of that. All of it is part of the crime problem. That's true. Now, here's Larry Hogan. You know, the action man who wants to show that he cares about Baltimore. It is an election year. The governor runs for re-election next year, saying he's got a plan. And he puts this thing forward after having some talks with Pugh during the summer, right? There were some conversations with Pugh over the summer. They both said that they had a lot of ideas for dealing with Baltimore's crime problems, and we didn't hear anything for several months. And now it's December, and here's the governor who's saying he's basically sending in the state police and putting together a more aggressive action plan than he feels the city has in place.
That's exactly what he said. You have, I guess, 2 competing visions on how to deal with crime. Mayor Pugh, in her crime plan, did say she wanted more patrols and better technology for police. And in fact, the state did fund computers and police cars, $2 million for that. But she also included a bunch of things about addressing the root causes of crime, longer hours of rec centers open, free community college, things like that, where we're going to give people an option, we're going to invest in people, job training, drug treatment, things like that. And the governor basically said yesterday he did not consider those to be immediate crime-fighting tactics and was somewhat dismissive of them. The mayor responded by saying the governor's crime plan was nothing new and dismissed that as well. I think she's arguing it's more of a return to the policies of the past of longer sentences, more arrests.
Aggressive policing.
That kind of thing, yes.
Well, there are some things in the governor's plan that we should talk about a little bit, because it seems like these are things that the governor could have done 2.5 years ago after the riots of April 2015, when it was clear Baltimore was going through a crime surge. May or may not have been related to Freddie Gray. It was trending up even before the whole Freddie Gray incident. And we had a year of 344 homicides, followed by year of more than 300, followed by another. So there's things that in the governor's plan that he could have done 2.5 years ago, in my view. For one thing, using the state police. And what's his idea there? How does he want to use the state police?
A couple of ways. One, he asked the various state agencies that police in Baltimore, the state police, the MTA police, MDTA, et cetera, to do patrols of high-crimed areas. Now, these will not be the lead agency making arrests, but they will be driving through these neighborhoods to have a police presence. Two, the state police are supposed to be assisting in a greater role on the serving of outstanding warrants. He said targeting the most violent offenders. I'm not exactly sure how that was defined, but joining in with the city police and the Baltimore sheriffs as they and the U.S. Marshals as they serve warrants.
Those are all good things.
Right.
But to my point, they could have been done 2 years ago.
And in fact, I think some of the Democrats in the General Assembly are saying these were things that used to be done under the past administration that has sort of fallen away that are now being reinstituted. At least that's what Senator Ferguson told me.
The phrase aggressive sweep was in the governor's plan. Aggressive sweep of outstanding warrants?
Yes, that's right.
Using federal marshals and state police?
That's right, yeah, and focusing on the worst of the worst, in his view. It is true always that there are tens of thousands of outstanding warrants in Baltimore. When you have a criminal justice system our size with as many arrests as we have, you are going to have a certain percentage of warrants, and they can always fight and do better to clear that backlog.
So if the mayor isn't there and the police commissioner isn't there, it's a little odd, isn't it, to see the governor standing there with other officials, including the state's attorney from Carroll County, who's now going to be in charge of a cross-jurisdiction crime-fighting council, right? Because
they
want to focus on gang activity. But it's a little odd to see the governor announcing that we're going to do this, and the police commissioner, Kevin Davis, is not standing there next to him.
No, yeah, that was quite striking. You have a vision of all these law enforcement, largely men, with crew cuts, standing side by side, pledging to get tough on Baltimore crime, and no top officials from Baltimore are there. You've got people from Carroll County and Harford County, Baltimore County, Montgomery County, people from all over, state officials, and the mayor's not there. Marilyn Mosby's not there, the state's attorney. Police Commissioner Kevin Davis isn't there. So I asked about that. I said, were these people invited? And they claimed they were. And
the governor's office claims they were invited.
They said that we invited them, yes.
But being invited to a press conference is one thing. Sitting down and collaborating on a plan that includes the state, which may take some time. Of course, the governor's had plenty of time to do this. Did that occur? Was there a...
Well, I think what happened here is there was a falling out between the mayor and the governor, who have played nice with each other for the better part of a year over the issue of crime. And I think she did not appreciate his comments the week before about how he didn't know if she had a crime plan when, of course, she says, I do have a crime plan.
She's proud of her crime plan.
I gave it to him in person.
Yeah.
He says, what I meant was, I don't think you have a good crime plan to deal immediately with crime.
Right.
He reiterated that point.
Now, did he say this to her privately and then go public with it?
You know, I don't know about their private discussions, but that's what he said from the podium yesterday was.
Yeah, and he said it last week.
Yeah, so this
and
isn't
it was
twice.
Kind of cryptic. That's why I say he's kind of throwing her to the curb here. These two were supposed to be pals, right? The mayor, who was a state senator before she was mayor, bragged about her relationship, a good relationship with Larry Hogan.
That's right. He spoke at her inauguration about how great the new relationship would be, and together they would solve all these problems in the state and in Baltimore. Obviously, he had a somewhat icy relationship with the past mayor, Stephanie Rawlings Blake.
It's interesting how this plays in people's minds, how this plays to Larry Hogan's suburban rural base. He again looks like an action figure, an action man who is taking charge and maybe saving Baltimore City from itself.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of people who I get emails all the time, frequently, from people who say, you know, you've had Democratic control of Baltimore City all these years and look where you are. The city's a mess. And I have a whole counter argument to that. But they're looking at Larry Hogan as the guy who can fix Baltimore. And so this plays to that. Well, there are people in Baltimore City, some of whom voted for Catherine Pugh, who may not be very happy also with her crime plan and think, yeah, we welcome the governor into this. We need some action.
Absolutely. And in fact, it's interesting to look at the politics for Larry Hogan. Larry Hogan, at the beginning part of his term, was part of the wing of the Republican Party that was not for mass incarceration, right? He signed and promoted the Justice Reinvestment Act, which was about getting drug offenders treatment and lessening the number of people in jail. Now, with crime in its third year of being so high, he seems to have taken the more traditional view of Republicans, which is longer sentences, more arrests, tougher policing. He is starting to get hit by the Democrats some on Baltimore crime. Obviously, most of the criticism has been on Baltimore officials, but I have seen press releases coming out from the Democrats about where has Hogan been on crime? Why isn't he doing more? Obviously, the state is a big player in criminal justice in Baltimore. The state runs the corrections. The state runs parole and probation, the state police. So there are a number of aspects that are under the governor's bailiwick.
And parole and probation is no small thing there, because you can use parole and probation agents to aggressively monitor repeat offenders. That's the ceasefire model, right? You kind of warn them about, you know, if they get in trouble again, they're going to go away for a long time and all that stuff. You could use your parole and probation agents for that purpose. Well, back to my point about the timing of this. You look back on all that's happened here. Larry Hogan patted himself on the back for saving Baltimore City. He actually used the words, "We saved Baltimore and never got a thank you for it," from the previous mayor, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, following the unrest of April 2015. In June 2015, he killed the $2.9 billion Red Line, a major project for transportation through Baltimore that had been in the planning stages for 10 years. And he said goodbye to nearly $1 billion in federal funding for that. A year later, he pulls the plug on State Center, a $1.5 billion redevelopment project that would have benefited the west side of the town where a lot of the unrest occurred. And so you look at those things and look at some other things, some other funding that was pulled, you know, eliminating funding for safe streets one year. And, you know, then it had to be restored. You look at all that and you say, well, you know, it's a spotty track record when it comes to the governor's attitude toward Baltimore, to say the least. And now some time has passed. I looked at it today. It's like 980 homicides that have occurred since April 2015.
Mm.
And now we got a crime plan from the governor of Maryland. It seems to me, again, that he just could have done all of this sooner.
Well, I think that that's the point you're going to see the Democratic opponents to the governor make in this coming year.
Okay, Luke, thanks very much.
Thank you, Dan.
You can find a link to City Hall reporter Luke Broadwater's stories about Mayor Pugh and Governor Hogan in the notes with this podcast. You can also find a link to The Sun's editorial on the two crime plans. My last word on this: people in Baltimore are desperate to see this three-year surge of violence end, and most of us will say the city needs all the help it can get and that we should be grateful for what Hogan's put forward. Fine. But there have been 934 homicides since April 2015. And the governor could have done a lot more to help long before now. That's our show for today. Comments welcome. Please review the show on iTunes if you get a chance. The producers of Roughly Speaking are Steve Early and Quinn Kelly. This is Dan Rodericks here at the Baltimore Sun. Thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking, and we'll see you again on Friday for the weekend show.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. Located at 6080 Falls Road, more information can be found at theivybookshop.com or by calling 410-377-2966.